1017 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. My friend Scott Hughes is in for Mike today. And we're joined by, golly, the head cheese, Ray Stajic from the Weather Channel. Hello, old friend.
This is the guy that controls the Barksdale bubble, right?
Yeah.
I am that guy, right? Yeah, you got the...
So, Ray, yesterday to go run some errands, and I have this film on my car that's not pollen. It's a brown-yellowy mix. It had to be the dust. Is the Saharan dust cloud here now?
Yeah, it's here. Just as quick as it's here, it's probably going to be gone. A brief little visit, and as we go through today, right now, not picking up much more left over. So if it is hanging around, it would be probably going away after today. But if you saw a little bit of haze and almost look pretty during sunrise and sunset, a little colorful in the sky, that's what it was. Not out of whack for this time of year. Usually these Saharan dust layers make their journey across the Atlantic and get into the Gulf and get into our region, and that's what we had for some of the pretty sunrises and sunsets in the past couple of days.
Now it's moving out, moving toward the East Coast now, I assume?
Yeah, kind of getting turned around, this big ridge of high pressure, and kind of dissipating and then getting moved away from us off toward the east and north. But it does look like it's going to be going away. You know, besides that, there's other inhibiting factors in the tropical Atlantic, too. So it's been a good thing to keep the tropical activity since Arthur at a minimum. But it's not just that that's been going on that's keeping what's going on in the tropics at a minimum, but it's still early.
Okay, we had a blast of storms with Arthur. South Louisiana was really hard hit. Rainfall totals, I would imagine, for June are kind of off the chart for some parts of our state, right?
Yeah, I believe a state record was almost 30 inches of rain from whatever was left over from Arthur. Officially at the airport in Shreveport, I know nobody lives there, but that's where we measure. 7.55 inches for the month, about 3 inches above average. And that event brought in about 2.5 inches of rain. Obviously, some more, some less, and just some tremendous and in some cases catastrophic flooding. Did do a little bit of work on the drought, now moderate to even some severe levels of drought, but may not account for what happened last week. So that's usually taken on a Tuesday with a drought monitor that comes out on a Thursday. So this week, from any additional rain that we got last week, this week's drought monitor may pick up on what we had received through all of last week. And then we'll see if we've ended up doing even better on the drought. The problem now with that is, though, is that we're locked in this ridge, and we may not see a raindrop here till maybe the 4th, but I think the chances will be better as we get into the 5th. And 6th of July.
Okay.
Yeah, good morning, Ray. We've had all this water you talked about. It's been hanging around. I've noticed it's been very, very humid. It's felt very, very hot. And I'm understanding we're about to get hotter. Is that correct?
Yeah, a couple of ticks hotter. The hottest we've been so far this month, 94 degrees. That's happened twice, on the 28th and the 22nd. Could be closer to 95, 97. So I think between 94 and 97 degrees from now right through the holiday, and probably even Sunday and Monday. Now, that's just one piece of it. So you've got air temperature, right? You'll see that on, you know, the car thermometer. You'll see it on the bank thermometers or your phone or wherever you see the temperature, say 95. Mm-hmm. Then you got to factor in the high dew point. So the ridge is to our east. We've got this flow coming in off the Gulf. That's bringing in the humidity, the higher dew points. So that's when you get to the feels like, or what the heat index is. And 100 to 105, maybe even hotter, maybe 105 to 110 at times this week through the 4th of July. So it's that air that kind of sticks to you, the air you can wear when you've got that microscopic water vapor in the air. The humidity, it doesn't allow the body to cool. So it's kind of the opposite of wind chill. Wind chill pulls heat away from exposed skin, so your body feels colder. When you've got higher humidity and higher dew points, that's that water vapor in the air that kind of holds the air closer to your body, so it doesn't allow your body to cool, and that's why it feels hotter than the actual air temperatures.
But, the good news, it's going to cool down every night, right? It'll get nice and cool in the evenings.
Sure. 77, 80 degrees on a late June or early July morning, that feels
But the folks that do work outdoors, this is really a caution. You need to be extra careful the next few days, right?
Right. And I lived it back in the day, as they say. Construction workers, I always kind of have a bias toward them. I used to do that. You know, plenty of breaks if you can get them, but, you know what your limitations are for heat stroke or heat exhaustion. It's not only if you're working outdoors, strenuous activities, if you're working in the yard, the kids at ball games, keep them hydrated with plenty of fluids. Keep an eye on the elderly and the pets too. Make sure that they're cool and in a safe place. And know the signs of heat stroke and dehydration are. You start feeling a little off or a little bit dizzy, you know it's time for you to take a break and get yourself cooled off any way you can.
Ray Stajic, Weather Channel. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
You bet. Take care. 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
I'm here. Reuben, how are you today?
I'm okay.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You look happy.
Thanks.
We're going to have a pretty big day today. Former mayor and current DDA director Cedric Glover is going to guest host. He'll be joining us in about 7-8 minutes. He's headed this way right now. State Rep Stephen Jackson is going to join us after 7 o'clock this morning.
Big day.
Because we got a lot of things in the legislature that are coming our way in terms of funding projects. He'll be talking about that, sharing kind of what, you know, the bacon that we're bringing home and some big things. I'm a little bit bothered this morning by something that is troubling me. And I'll let you... How often have we talked about... Pick up your water bottle behind you over there and put it up to your microphone and make it make its noise. Okay, it's full, so it's not making that normal noise it makes when it's empty. Water bottles have gone to the toilet.
Yes.
They're horrible.
It's part of the reason I buy this brand is it's because the bottles are, they're not bags.
Right.
They've turned into plastic bags.
They're plastic bags. Well, now listen to this. I'm going to share with you something that is really, California is putting in place real strict recycling laws that they're aiming to reduce plastic packaging waste.
Okay.
Okay. So if you're a company and you sell, you know, let's say 10% of your purchases are in California, it's a big state, a lot of people. And you sell your shampoo or your water or whatever is in a plastic bottle.
Right.
You're going to have to meet those stringent requirements that California puts in place. So guess what you do? You change all your bottles.
Right.
You change everything because you gotta sell to California.
Ugh.
So here's what's going on. 17 other states and a trade association representing wholesalers and distributors are suing California. They're trying to block the enforcement of that recycling law. And this lawsuit's been filed in federal court, and it argues that California's recently finalized regulations will gradually require companies to scale back any single-use plastics and ensure that all their plastic and packaging is recycled or compostable.
Okay.
That means that all plastic would have to be compostable or recyclable.
Yeah.
According to the California rules, as I read it. Do you think, in the grand scheme of things, do companies say, heck with you, California, we're not selling to you? Or do we make a separate bottle for you? Or do we change everything because of you?
All of it's going to cost you money.
Yeah.
All of it's going to, you know, your profits are going to suffer no matter what.
Because think of Lucy and Viv on the chocolate factory line.
Right.
Okay. Those bottles are, they come out of processing things like that.
Right.
You're now going to have one line for California bottles and another line for other state bottles.
And see, I thought all plastic was recyclable. Is that not the case?
I guess some is not anymore. I'm thinking of shampoo bottles. I don't know if those are recyclable or not. I'm not certain.
Huh.
They want to make all plastics recyclable. They want to do away with the single-use packets of things that are in plastics. And I'm trying to think like spoons and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And I actually went in, where was I? When I was in Greece, I was at several restaurants and the utensils were wooden.
Okay.
They're making them out of wood. And I thought, this is interesting. So I don't know where we go from here, but 17 states are suing California. They're saying these rules are crazy and we don't want to have to deal with them because you know what happens in California is going to trickle across the country.
It sometimes does.
And come this way. So we're keeping a close eye on that. We'll be talking about that throughout the morning. Also, the big decision on birthright citizenship, Donald Trump loses that round in court on a 6-3 vote. I'm kind of surprised it wasn't unanimous, but we'll talk more about that. Cedric Glover will be here. We've got a big, big day today. Talking teacher stipends, too. Big decision on that. Looks like the legal fight is over. All that is coming up right here on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Okay, Cedric Glover is in studio with me for the rest of the morning. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
On the scale of you love football, I know that.
Correct.
American football.
Absolutely. The only kind there is.
Watch basketball a little bit?
I do.
Okay. Golf, not watching golf?
Occasionally.
All right. Let's see, baseball?
Some, yes.
Where does soccer fall on your scale of sports?
Not at all.
Not watching all. World Cup, no
right,
interest.
Right up there with competitive fishing and those sort of things. Just
supermarket sweep, Ruben.
I'm exactly. I'm glad that it's there. It's great to have. If we can bring some here, so be it.
Right. But, you never played soccer.
Only on the schoolyard playground. You know,
recess time.
Our soccer games broke down to kickball. You know, we needed something with innings and an objective scoring system and.
Okay. We are the U.S. playing tonight. We play, help me with this one, Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Herzegovina.
That's who we play. We're a heavy favorite. We should win that and then move on to the round of 16, which means there's 16 teams left. Cedric, I have a problem because we're in the bracket with Spain and Portugal. One of my sons was a soccer nut, fanatic. And he loves Cristiano Ronaldo, who is the world's superstar.
Okay.
He plays for Portugal.
Okay.
So I text my son, and I said, if Portugal and the U.S. meet in their next round, if they win two, who are you rooting for? To which he says, Portugal.
Oh, wow.
He's a lieutenant in the Marines.
See? Yeah.
How can he possibly do that?
The communist roots of soccer. It's a slow invasion, but it's working.
He just has loved that player for years. I guess if you're real passionate about a certain player, it can even overwhelm your patriotism.
I don't get it. I mean, a sport where the clock continuously runs can end in a tie.
Yeah.
Only one or two scores.
Right.
You don't get to hit anybody. I don't get it, but I'm glad there are people who like it and enjoy it. Let's bring all of them who want to play soccer here to Shreveport as often as possible.
Absolutely.
Just don't count me in.
Yeah, you're not playing soccer. No. 6 o'clock tonight is the game. It's going to be a big one, and hopefully the U.S. wins and moves on to the round of 16.
And I play it before I watch it.
Yeah. When we come back, I'm a little bit troubled by this birthright citizenship ruling from the Supreme Court. Can we talk about that when we get back? Hmm. All right, that is coming up. Cedric Glover will opine on that. Ooh, I used a big word. Listen to me. That's coming up right here on Keel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
1017 FM, 710 Keel. Aaron McCarty here. Mike is on vacation. My friend Cedric Glover is in, former mayor, current DDA director.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We kind of knew this ruling was coming from the U.S. Supreme Court on the birthright citizenship, the 14th Amendment. If you're born in the U.S., you're a citizen, no matter what. The president, one of his very first executive orders, attempted to change that. There are a lot of people who thought you can't change the Constitution with an executive order.
Correct.
Barack Obama can't do it.
Correct.
Donald Trump can't do it.
That is
Bill
correct.
Clinton can't do it.
Absolutely.
You know, so I really did think the ruling would be 9-0.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't. It was 6-3.
Correct.
Explain that.
I have no explanation whatsoever except for the ability of some people to be able to contort themselves into whatever pretzel shape configuration they need to in order to please certain people. Because obviously it is very plain. It is very direct. It is very specific. Doesn't equivocate. It says what it says.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty clear. And I am thankful for the fact that at least 6 of those 9 were able to stand up and unequivocally say so. But I'm not surprised that the 3 that did not.
The Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch dissented. Thomas argued that the 14th Amendment was intended only for former slaves and their descendants.
But it doesn't say that.
That's not what the words say.
Exactly. So if you don't interpret, if you're not a strict adherent to the Constitution in all other instances, in this case, then why are you finding nuance and exception and attempting to find some modern day interpretation now? I mean, have it both ways.
How can a justice of the Supreme Court add words to the Constitution or add meaning that he thinks is what they meant, but that's not what it says?
That is absolutely correct.
And I say this, and I know there's people going to scream at me about this because they want Trump to get his way, but I want you to envision Barack Obama. Let's pick a constitutional amendment. Guns, whatever.
The second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right to bear arms.
Absolutely.
Barack Obama saying, no more guns.
Well,
executive order.
And you do so because you say that at the time we only had muzzles and
yes.
other forms of less developed, you know, firepower technology in play at that time, and it did not account for the things that we could do now.
If you would be screaming about Barack Obama doing that.
Right.
You should be screaming about Donald Trump doing this.
Absolutely.
And I know, you know, there are a lot of people that are going to say, oh, but this, you know, this is what it really means. That's not what it says.
No.
It says what it says.
Absolutely.
And so I really struggle with these justices. Are they catering to the president? Do they really believe that's what it meant in the Constitution? And here's my problem, Cedric Glover, is if the Constitution says birthright citizenship, you're born here, you're a citizen. And the folks that disagree say, well, people are just flying here when they're pregnant to give birth to their babies. Well, stop that problem.
Right.
You know, stop people from coming in pregnant
right. And
giving birth to their babies.
There are legislative solutions to some of the issues and problems that you've identified, but you cannot go around what it is that the words mean. Similar to the challenge with the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
It means what it means. You have the right to bear arms. And the fact that you have a better set of arms, a more efficient set of arms, a more deadly set of arms, you know, 200 years later, doesn't mean that the amendment doesn't mean what it means.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we know pregnant women coming from other countries, getting on airplanes or driving in the country. I mean, do a better check of pregnant women if you have to. Maybe that's not constitutional. I don't know. But put something in place where you stop that birth tourism, which
right. They
call it.
Right.
And I know they say they're working on, you know, securing the border, and they claim they have secured the border. Well, then this shouldn't be a problem anymore.
Right? Correct. Or amend the Constitution. There's a process for that. If you don't like the language of what the 14th Amendment says right now, then go through the process that's necessary in order to be able to adjust and change that language.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened about 30-something times, you know, since 1787.
You pass it in both houses?
Correct.
And then you send it out to the states?
Absolutely.
And let the states decide?
Absolutely.
Okay, the other ruling we're going to talk about later in the morning is the transgender athletes can be barred from participating in female sports. And they this was a states' rights issue. They said, let the states determine what they want to do. I have concerns about that, too, though, because when those states' laws are different,
well,
how do you compete regionally?
Well, you know, that's the argument that was made. In fact, I'm surprised to hear some people say that now, because that's the argument that was made back during the Jim Crow era. That, you know, allow the South to make the rules that it wants to make with regard to race. And, you know, the North and the West and the East will do what it wants to do in that regard and let the state do what they want to do. I don't think that's right. I don't think that males should be allowed to compete against sports, in sports, against women who are born female. That's just simply not right.
Right.
And you have an inherent competitive advantage when you get to a certain age. You become different, and once you become different, then that ends up being an area where you go into your category and you compete in that area.
Absolutely. State Rep. Stephen Jackson going to join us after 7 o'clock. We'll be talking about many of the projects approved for Northwest Louisiana. We will let him go through that list, and we'll find out if some things got cut that he was really looking forward to, too. That is ahead right here on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Big Stories of the Day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Back with DDA Director, former mayor, former state rep. What else? Garbage collector?
Absolutely. City council member.
Football player.
Staffing company operator.
There's a long, that's a big business card you got. Cedric Glover is in studio with us. You have another event today downtown, the luncheon. What are you calling
lunch
it?
Lunch and Discover.
Okay.
Which is an elevation and advancement of our Lunch on Us program that Janie Landry and Lauren Davidson started a couple of years ago. We've been blessed with some appropriation of state funding thanks to Representative Stephen Jackson and the rest of this delegation. We matched that with dollars from the Downtown Shreveport Development Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've increased the amount that we expend on those Lunch on Us coupons. They've gone from $10 to $12.50. We've also added a gift certificate program along with it to where you can also win a $25 gift certificate to downtown businesses as well. We start off with music. Eddie Spencer will be setting the mood for us as we start. And then also, we feature the fare of one of our downtown restaurants. Today, we'll have Fat Tuesdays once again, and we have what's called a tasting table. We ask them to provide a widespread selection of samples of the kinds of things that people can come
cool.
and select. And those tastes should be something that would prompt a person to say, if I got a piece of that, let me go buy a whole one from you. And we also have, we hear from various folks around downtown. We'll be hearing from Sylvester Marshall, the proprietor there at Vine Books and Vinyl. We'll be hearing from Bill Sabo. He'll give us an update with regard to the Retail Strategies Initiative that we're partnering with the city of Shreveport on. We've got some other business folks who'll come in and share. And then Dr. Charles Vincent will be in attendance as well. He'll be talking about downtown Shreveport and some of the history that's there. Talk about a little bit of what he shared last night over at the medical school regarding the sequicentennial of what is now the Oxnard-LSU Academic Medical Center. So a great day to just come down and celebrate and network and enjoy all things relevant to downtown.
Where is it?
It's at Vine Books and Vinyl at 620 Texas Street. That's right next to the Rhinos at 624 Texas.
And what time?
Starting at 10:30 and all the way to 1 o'clock.
Okay.
Come in, fill out a quick card. That card gets you a raffle ticket. That raffle ticket puts you in competition for dozens and dozens of lunches and gift certificates
cool.
that we will give out throughout the course of the day, helping to showcase and celebrate all things downtown.
That brings me to a lot of people avoid downtown. You know that. We've got about a minute left. Easy to park, easy to get in and out of this spot,
typically? Well, I mean, you've got the curbside parking that's in and available. You've got lots and what have you all around downtown.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, downtowns and everywhere are not the suburban locations where you come in and park 10 feet away from the door.
Right.
But those suburban locations 10 feet away from the door don't have the history, the ambiance, and all the other things that urban cores have. And so, you know, we welcome you to come down. There's lots of curbside parking available. There are lots of surface lots available. Come on down, enjoy. And most specifically, our primary audience are those who are already downtown.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're the folks who are already downtown, you've already parked because you're in your garage, wherever you park.
Wander over.
Mm-hmm. Walk a block, walk a half block, walk two blocks over, and you're already there. And
yeah.
So that's our primary audience. Those are the folks that we're primarily targeting because there are thousands of those that are already there.
Yeah.
And we certainly welcome others to come on in. Have a chance, if you're on your way to catch one of the matinees at the Robinson, come by and see us beforehand, and you maybe even win a gift certificate. It gives you even more to be able to do at the Robinson.
Absolutely. Lunch and Discover happening today. Vine, Books and Vinyl, 620 Texas. Go down and enjoy. Looking forward to our next segment after 7 o'clock. State Rep. Stephen Jackson will join us in studio. We'll be talking about all the bacon he's bringing home, and did we leave any in Baton Rouge? We will have that coming up right here on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. Seven FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty, Cedric Glover, former mayor, DDA director, is our guest host this morning. Thanks
Good morning.
For coming.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
We have quite a lineup right now. We've got State Rep. Stephen Jackson in studio. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me on. Good morning.
Oh, you got it? You got him?
Mic check, we here.
Yeah,
thank you for
go.
Having me on. Good morning. It's good to be with you this morning.
We turn this other one off, Ruby. We got big news from Baton Rouge in terms of how much money our area got. Did we get our fair share? We never seem to, but how did we do this time?
I think we did pretty good. You know, we need to do a historical look. I told someone, I think if you look at the net effect of what the governor's vetoes were, we might come out somewhere close to or maybe just a hair more than New Orleans and Baton Rouge. And so that's almost unheard of.
Mm-hmm. What's on your list that were big wins for us?
Definitely the medical school, the St. Vincent Mall, redoing that facility, being able to redevelop it, that $25 million seed dollars. I think that's going to be huge for our area with regard to research and what they're trying to do with national research.
Mm-hmm.
Then the medical, not the medical school, nursing school with Northwestern. We were able to get the cash. It was the Board of Regents' number one project. When the Board of Regents submit their capital outlay request, that was the number one request on there. So we knew it was coming. Actually got more money put in for it. And so those, I think, are just huge wins for me, getting the remainder of Hearn Avenue completed so that you're not playing bumpity-bump driving down Hearn Avenue. And so... You know, they originally had programmed to go from 3132 all the way up to, I think, Greenwood Road. And I complained and complained and complained. And the good thing about being on House Transportation is you're right there with the department. And what the secretary came back and told me was, Representative, we get $3 million in LTIF funding. I forgot what LTIF is short for. But if we get $3 million in the extra funding that we need for LTIF, if Hearn Avenue costs $3 million, that's going to be the only road we do.
Mm-hmm.
So those three, definitely.
Let me ask you about the St. Vincent Mall and the LSU Health Science Center. For people that are just on that train, explain what's happening, because they're essentially taking over the old Sears building.
Yes, they're taking over a huge dormant portion of the St. Vincent Mall, so that Sears building. They're also taking over, I believe, they have a little bit of space outside of it, and they will actually get the... the automotive center that was there.
Okay.
So they're going to completely redo that for lab space. I want to say about 40 to 50 businesses that'll come and to recruit businesses here as well. And so that's going to be a huge redevelopment area and just taking a dormant area in there. Those are going to be people who need to go get lunch. Those are going to be people who may want to go out into the mall and go shopping. But we eventually think, you know, there's more growth that could be had there in that space. And so I think it's going to be huge, particularly when we talk about the NIH grant and the national research status that LSU is trying to achieve. And when the president says, you know, this is our number one priority going forward for the next 2 to 3 years, He was willing to come to Capital Outlay as well as the budget committee meetings and say that on the record.
Did you have much pushback on that?
No. You know, one thing that I found is that, you know, when we talk in unison, and you know, none of this is done by any one person. This is a delegation effort. But when we talk in unison about North Louisiana needs and we speak on one accord, it gets folks' attention. And shout out to Chairman McFarland, Jack mm-hmm. McFarland, who has been instrumental and very, very heavy-handed in making sure North Louisiana, period, gets its fair share. I remember there were times when, you know, he was saying, hey, if we can't get our fair share, we'll just stop the whole budget process. And former rep, you know, the chairman drives the budget process on the House side. And so he's very heavy-handed in making sure that we get what we need for North Louisiana.
Let me ask you about the mall. Mall St. Vincent, mm-hmm. Sears, you know, one of the big anchor stores. Could this be, I don't want to say the end of the mall, but a changing in how that mall is used, and ultimately it could be a medical complex, the whole thing.
It could be. You know, we also have $25 million coming for the medical corridor. Senator Cassidy, the governor, the legislature, previous legislature at that, with Senator Cassidy move forward with the RISE grant or RAISE grant. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm saying it right. But that's a huge infrastructure project that's going to complement that area. But I would agree that it could become just completely a medical complex with wet labs and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. It's just something that, you know, can take off. And when we talk about how do we compete with the UABs of the world, how do we compete with what they're doing in East Texas with their medical facilities over there, I think this makes us competitive.
Okay, this is going to, I'm going to bring up something that Cedric Glover has said okay. over and over again. We might need to take a break and come okay. back and talk about it. But he has said there has been a move afoot okay. in Baton Rouge for years to take our medical school
okay.
and move it to Baton Rouge.
Okay.
And I want to ask you if this move that we're now making makes it a surety that this medical school is safe here. Put that okay. in your brain.
All right.
We will talk about that. I know you've had
he
that
He might
concern.
Have some more history than
he,
I have.
Yeah, he does. Trust me, he's got a lot of history on that. We will talk about that when we get back right here. 1017 FM, 710 Key.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Back, 1017 FM, 710 Keel. Cedric Glover, guest hosting today. Thanks
Good
for
morning.
Coming in.
Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
State Representative Stephen Jackson. Cedric, go over a little bit of the history of your concerns about how secure our medical school is. You have told me many times that you were worried that they were going to try to move this medical school to Baton Rouge.
Well, there was certainly a period about 10 to 12 years ago with the status of things as they were then. And it's no secret that it is a significant part of the Baton Rouge Area Foundation's vision. They have a master plan that talks about the advent of a medical school for Baton Rouge, part of that Perkins Road corridor,
mm-hmm.
With their research complex there. They were the temporary home for a while post-Katrina of the New Orleans Medical School that really put that whole effort on steroids. And so, yes, there was a period of time, 2016, 2017, 2018, when the funding situation here was very dire,
mm-hmm.
That there was that possibility.
You think that's dead now?
I think it's dead from the perspective that there has been an absolute commitment with additional resources. You've got the new Center for Medical yes. Education that's been put in place here.
Mm-hmm.
The recent investment that Representative Jackson just made reference to in terms of the Sears over at Mall St. Vincent. So, yes, I think all of that potential has now been dissipated. And we now at least assured that our medical school can stay. The question will be is whether or not Baton Rouge can ever manage enough political capital to actually get a version of their own.
Mm-hmm. And could three survive in the state? Stephen, what do you think?
You know, that's a hard question because you've got Shreveport, you've got New Orleans, and you've got Xavier coming on with theirs now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
What's the other one? Was there another one?
There's
Monroe.
Dental. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, there. So basically four, because don't forget, Xavier's coming on with a full-fledged. So you will have two in New Orleans.
Wow.
You have LSU New Orleans with their medical facility. Well,
Tulane already has. Mm-hmm.
Tulane. Okay, LSU. Tulane. Yeah. And so, and then Xavier's coming on doing their partnership with Ochsner. So,
okay.
You know, I don't know that there will be room for growth there, but I mean, hey, we're trying to still get a law school here. So I don't want to say that sat there at some point that you reach a saturation point, because then they'll start making that argument here. But I do think that we are showing significant commitments to the Shreveport facility. President Roussey, or Rouse, I hope I'm saying his name right. He came up a couple of times and absolutely made the commitment. Of course, we hear it all the time. But when he reached out and said, hey, this project is number one for our system because it helps us move the needle. Mm-hmm. It's the single most significant project that will help us move the needle with regard to becoming a national player with regard to research.
Well, and I'm going to step out and take the risk and say, no, there should not be a school in Baton Rouge.
I agree 100%.
Because what we need here, and Representative Jackson made reference to it, is someplace that we all collected, about a busload of us, about 60 Shreveporters, back in 2013. Yeah. We went and spent a week in Birmingham meeting with the folks at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, because their school and our schools here are both the same age.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is theirs are five times bigger than ours.
It's the number one employer in Alabama.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's because they have concentrated excellence that makes them world class. You know, we have average here that we're trying to elevate to world class. And the only way you can get there is if you've managed to be able to direct the resources sufficient to be able to get there.
Keep investing, yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Continuing to say everybody gets one only gives us that same mediocrity that we've always gotten.
Spreading the money out.
Correct.
And you don't get it. Switch back to roads a minute. We talked about Hearn Avenue. Mm-hmm. What's the latest on the I-49 inner city connector? And the governor has pledged he wants to get that done. Are we close to making that happen?
My understanding is end of the year they should have an announcement. We don't know what that announcement is going to be, but the secretary has pledged that at some point before the end of the year, they plan to make some announcement. I would think that, you know, if I had to read between the tea leaves, if they were not confident that it was coming back in their favor or in the posture that they wanted it, I would think that they probably wouldn't be announcing it. Somebody said it's when you've got the Speaker of the House, you know, likely if he's pushing for it. So you just never know. I don't know what it may come back, but I do know that they are anticipating.
I don't know if I've ever asked you, do you support the completion?
I support making sure that neighborhood is kept intact. And I believe that there has been a route that has been contemplated that does preserve the neighborhood. I am for commerce. I am for transportation and logistics. But I am also mindful that the neighborhood, and we've got to make sure that we are doing transportation in a way that keeps traffic coming into our city. I don't want folks to skip over the investments that we're making in downtown, the investments that we're making on the West Edge, just to get to another point quicker. We know that when the I-49 is backed up, or there's a wreck on I-20 and they redirect that traffic, we see all the traffic that flows through the middle of the city right then. I don't want folks to stop taking the downtown in our areas just for a few minutes of expedience. But again, I want to make sure that we're doing things that also support transportation and logistics. So, you know, I tell people I tend to fall on the side of let's do this in a way where everybody can get up from the table. And I'm hopeful, and what I have been told by the secretary is that they're looking to design the project in a way that hopefully gives everybody a happy medium.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some people want what they want.
Right.
And if you deviate away from it, they don't want it.
The governor did veto some items that were headed our way. $100,000 for the Caddo School Board for the Film and Entertainment Certificate Program at Huntington. Some money for SPAR, for a travel track team. Explain what that was.
You know, I don't really know what those projects are. They were not my projects. Each member gets to submit projects. So those were not my projects. I suspect that they probably were other House member projects because they were in the budget when they left the House. And so I'm not sure what was the intent there. You know, I know the governor, he gave us a pretty good speech at the beginning of the session talking about painting houses.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if the folks, whether it was in Shreveport, New Orleans, Alexandria, I don't know if those folks were willing to cut grass. I don't know.
he cut a lot from New Orleans. There's no doubt.
Okay, maybe he was doing the grass cut.
But in the grand scheme of things, I mean, one thing I didn't like that he cut was the Cedar Grove Friendship House, $250,000. I find that pretty worthy of state dollars. But was it NGO type things like that he targeted?
There was a widespread conversation about making sure that we put resources into local, if we could give the funding to the local governments as pass-through. And so that might have gotten caught up in that. You know, it's hard to tell because capital outlay is different. And I believe those projects came through capital outlay. But then, you know, on the other side, capital outlay, we're looking at making some changes to capital outlay. We're looking to do some things different, at least talking with Chairman Bacalize to try to make sure that we're funding projects that are shovel ready and actually ready to go. Because what we found is we're probably about $1 billion committed in capital outlay, but these projects are just sitting there in the design phase. So I have no clue what went on with the governor's cabinet and his team with that. But, you know, on the upside, we were able to get the funding for the DDA to help support our small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to make sure that we're supporting them. I believe we've got the event today with the next Lunch and Discover that's going to help small businesses be able to inject capital and resources into our downtown small business. I tell people I love to see the big projects be announced, but I want to make sure that they have something local, homegrown that they can go to when they are here. And so I still think we came out pretty good, even despite the vetoes that were put in place.
State Rep. Stephen Jackson, thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure to be here. I appreciate you.
Appreciate it a bunch. We're going to talk about Cross Bayou and the Cross Bayou Park we were promised. Is it ever going to happen? Cedric Glover he's going to opine again about that when we come back. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Back with State Representative Stephen Jackson, of course, guest host today, Cedric Glover. Stephen, we're going to tie you to your chair. You all
okay,
right?
I'm good. Okay, I'm good. I'm good.
We got to talk about the state office building because Representative Jackson played a big part in getting it downtown. Huh?
Absolutely. Could not let him leave without acknowledging the fact that as I left office in January of 24, the funding level for the state building was at $75 million. We were expecting that was going to be sufficient to be able to cover the cost. Obviously, you had a whole lot of things that were happening in that same time frame, tariffs that ended up coming on board, and there was a decision at that point made to begin value engineering the building, as they put it, which meant that all of what you see in terms of that glass curtain and all of the other thing that's there, they were beginning to chop and whittle and basically just kind of make it into something that we did not need and don't deserve. And it was Representative Jackson, in conjunction with the members of the Office Facilities Corporation Board, who heard the cries that came from here. Rep. Jackson helped lead the way, and with the help of everybody from the Speaker of the House, President of the Senate, Senator Ed Price, I believe Troy Abair.
Troy Abair, freshman rep.
Yeah. Who's on that committee as well, stepped forward.
Taylor Barra
as the Commissioner of Administration. They made the changes and adjustments that were necessary, things that were possible to do within the powers that are given to the Office Facilities Corporation to take that budget from $75 million to $110 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it largely preserves what we have. We don't have that great garden area that you see in some of those original renderings and those louvers, those white louvers that you see that extended out far from the glass. And some of those original renderings will be a little shorter. Won't be as prominent, but it'll still end up being the striking building that you see emerging up from the old former federal building in downtown.
And economically, so, Stephen, game changer.
Yeah,
downtown.
Game changing, you know, as well as making sure that we've got also some local participation on it. $110 million is something that's going to also move the economy here locally. And so we thought that it was a good idea to not value engineer and take the additional resources. It was my first ask of the speaker when I went to go meet with him and even talk about committees. He asked what were my priorities, and we started talking about this, and he didn't even know the speaker. He didn't even know what this Office of Facilities Corp was. And I remember him saying, let me get with Cindy, because I'm still finding out that I'm on all of these boards. I've got appointments on all of these boards. And he was like, I found out that it does exist. Mm-hmm. And so The Speaker of the House, Philip DeVille, shout out to him. He put Troy Hebert on there within like a couple of days of us asking, because they wanted to convene. And Senator Price was appointed by President Henry, and they kind of had that conversation about where do we go, and we were able to convince them, let's put the additional money in it so that we don't just have some box building sitting in downtown with, you know, the furniture that we probably would have in our homes.
Right.
It's something
right.
that could withstand this test of time, and you've seen it even from night.
Gorgeous.
It's a very gorgeous building. It's going to help complement the growth and the energy that's taking place in downtown. So I'm excited about it.
And 600 employees coming in to downtown Shreveport.
Huge.
And the hundreds of folks who will come in and out of the building daily will be a great support for our downtown business.
And hopefully we can at least get them maybe an hour lunch break. I know that was kind of the backstory, is trying to make sure that we can give them 45 minutes to an hour lunch break. But that's more of an internal policy discussion, because 30 minutes, a lot of people feel,
that's
you know,
tough.
We want them to go in and support those businesses.
Absolutely. So, when we come back, Cross Bayou, downtown development there, what could we do? Having riverfront property for a city is huge. What should we do with it? We'll talk more about that when we get back. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Back on Keel this morning, Cedric Glover in studio, in for Mike Martindale. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Delighted to be here.
Talking to the mayor last week with regard to the federal money that they have gotten to study Cross Bayou and that area in Ledbetter Heights, whether there's contamination or revitalization of the area. And the mayor mentioned possibly a hotel in that area. That was one of the things he actually said on the air. But I went back to the 96 bond issue. As you know, I do a little digging every now and then. And that was Cross Bayou was on that ballot, and it passed. We passed $5 million to acquire property for use as a public park on Cross Bayou. We have acquired property. We haven't built a park. Should that still be in the game plan? Is a park downtown needed?
Based upon the fact that, from my perspective, we have a big enough challenge managing to take care of the assets that we have right now, I don't think it's wise to continue to add and expand that footprint when you're challenged right now to be able to provide proper upkeep, maintenance, and care for those things that we have. I think the intent all along was to be able to put ourselves in a position to control the property, because there's always been that vision of the riverfront area curving around up Cross Bayou, that extending all the way to the old Waterworks Museum, being able to one day be able to take the old the General Scrapyard, acquire that property for public purpose, be able to go in and remediate all of that contamination and everything. And then at some point when there was a justification for doing so, being able to take that and turn it whether into just open green space, park space, or eventual development. And so there was never, from my perspective, any agreed upon understanding that we're going to turn this into a playground, a picnic area, a park, a trail, or what have you. It was all that we need to have ownership and control of these water-facing assets, so that when we get to a time where we want to have a broader, more detailed vision that makes sense to go forward, then we'll be in a position to be able to do so. But to talk about just simply building parks for the sake of building parks, or building buildings for the sake of building buildings, like at the time when there was a talk of, you know, let's build a new state building on Cross Bayou, let's build, move the courthouse to Cross Bayou and what have you. When you talk about doing those sorts of things, but also factoring in that you have empty and near empty buildings already in your existing downtown, mm-hmm. means that you're just continuing to dig the hole that you're already in when you should be trying to build up and pull yourself out of it.
Mm-hmm. The mayor has talked about they're going to see if there are hurdles down there with regard to environmental. We're going to run into some of that, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At some of those properties.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, one of which the city already owns, which is 90 Market Street. That's the old Deanna Brothers produce. Mm-hmm. The Perkins administration acquired that, which was a good move. There's also a parcel that we were able to work with the city and the Speaker Johnson and others to be able to finally make contact with the railroad. It used to be KCS, is now KPKC, Kansas City Pacific, Kansas City Railroad, regarding acquiring ownership of another 3.5 acre parcel that's in between two city-owned owned parcels. With that, we now have a complete, almost 10-acre plot of land on the south shore of Cross Bayou, immediately adjacent to the Hilton Hotel, and on the north side of downtown, that's available for future development. That could be a hotel or something else. Mm-hmm. It could also have some Cross Bayou frontage to it as well.
Absolutely. More with Cedric Glover when we get back. 1017 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Cedric Glover, put your McCarty's crazy hat on. You ready?
Absolutely.
Go through the drive-thru. You may have heard this story the other day. Drive-thru window. My tab is 819. I hand the young lady who's 20, maybe 22, I don't know, hand her $9. 5 and 4 ones. She gives me my drink. She gives me my bag. Thank you, ma'am. I said, my change? And she goes, oh, you're right. I'm due 80 cents, okay?
81, actually.
81 cents, mm-hmm. Exactly. So she had already closed the register. So she walks over across the business to somebody on the other side of the business and then comes back and hands me 80 cents. She gave me an extra penny, but gave me the most evil stare down you can imagine. Are we supposed to tip at drive-thrus?
Not to my knowledge or awareness.
And are we supposed to tip 80 cents?
Have not heard of that. Sonics, yes.
Yeah.
The McDonald's, Raising Cane's, Burger King's, where you're only handing it to me through the window?
Yeah.
No, that's a new one. I know now with the new penny situation.
Yes.
I have had instances where I've said, please don't give me any pennies. Hold on to them. So mm-hmm. whatever, you know, if you owe me 81 cents, just give me the 80 and you'll hold on to the penny. So. But no, and I've had a few people to take that to mean to keep the rest of the change, which I guess I've had to correct them. No,
right.
I need the $4 as well.
And if it was 8.85 or whatever, I'd have said keep the change. You know, I don't care about 15 cents or whatever, but it's 80 cents.
Right, absolutely.
It's 10% of the total.
Well, it's how we fill up our change drawers at home.
But you know what someone told me when I was at the Southern Gentleman's Classic? I was bringing this up before a bunch of the judges, and they said, you know, it wasn't that she was expecting a tip, probably. You know what it really was? And I said, what? She didn't know how to count the change.
Right.
Seriously?
Well, now, and it's my understanding, I think the cash register these days are supposed to give them that direction.
Yeah.
But, you know, talent's hard to find these days.
Are you tipping... You're tipping your barber. You're tipping if you go to Sonic at a restaurant. If you get a massage, you're tipping those folks. I'm not tipping at a drive-thru.
Absolutely.
When did that start?
I have no idea when that started. I mean, it's probably somewhere that's kind of related to tipping for when you have a carry-out order as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's kind of an expectation for that these days also. But, I mean, even that to me is a bit of a stretch. I do tip, you know, under those circumstances,
sure.
But not the same as you were if you're having sit-down service. But yeah, that appears to be leeching over.
It's going crazy.
The one tipping scenario that has really gone over the line for me is Little Caesar's Pizza.
What?
You're turning around and grabbing a pizza out of a shelf, a heated shelf, and handing it to me. And then I go to pay, and the machine asks me for a tip. No. No, I'm not tipping you for that. Absolutely not.
Pickup service, that's a... I don't understand it. I don't get that.
Again, if you order a sandwich from Subway, if you order it online, and you're going to walk in and pick it up, before you pay, it says, what do you want to tip? No! I'm over it.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, that's one of the things I think some of the World Cup folks have said about America is that, you know, you guys should pay your hospitality people more and not expect us to do so with the tips. Mm-hmm. I find that interesting. I don't know.
That was the situation in Greece.
Okay.
That we didn't tip. They said, we don't tip. We pay our workers. Don't tip them.
It may have been you that I heard talking about that.
If I gave a cab driver, you know, €2 or a dollar or euro, they were looking at me like I was the Queen of England. And I thought, because they're not, they don't expect tips.
Well, I mean, it is amazing to think that still in this day and age, that the base salary is what, $2.13?
Yeah.
For a wait staff?
You got a point.
All right.
Absolutely. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Back with Cedric Glover, Downtown Development Authority Director, former mayor, former state rep, former snow cone stand owner. I just found out. How did I not know that?
Cedric's House of Snow Cones, 1977, 1978.
I'm a snow cone queen.
Absolutely.
Love them. We had Orville Hall in for about an hour a couple of weeks ago talking about the Curtis 50 Cent Jackson plan for downtown. You kind of are watching it from afar, I guess, but are involved too. I would like to first start with, do you have some concerns or is there anything that is worrying you or that you're skeptical about as you watch this?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Because I have been from the very beginning focused on what the core of all of this, of what all of this is about. And that is, it's not about the G-Dome. It's not for me. It's not mm-hmm. about the G-Dome. It's not about human harmony. It's not about any of the other activities in terms of the private projects that he's working on presently along Commerce Street. It's not for any of the other real estate that he's bought throughout downtown. It goes back to the very first question that he asked of Orville Hall when Orville Hall, back in February of 2013, said, Mr. Curtis, 50 Cent Jackson, I would like for you to come and visit Shreveport. And Mr. Jackson's response back to him was a question. And that question was, Orville, do they still have film production tax credits mm-hmm. in the state of Louisiana? To which the answer was yes. He said, then I'm interested. And because Mr. Jackson understands, and I understand, that any and everything that he's talking about coming to Shreveport to do with regard to human harmony, with regard to the G-Dome, with regard to any other restaurants, Red River District, and everything else, the basis, the foundation upon which all of that rests is what he does from a film and television and other content production standpoint. That's what he gets incentives for, and other folks who come here get incentives for. That's what creates the jobs. That's where the grifts, the carpenters, the electricians, the caterers, the drivers, all of those things that ended up giving us the industry that we had here back in 2006, 7, 8, 9, and 10 that employed hundreds, that did millions and millions of dollars worth of business. That's the foundation. That's the core. And if we get only that, mm-hmm. if we get just that, then I will consider this to be an absolute success. All the rest of it, from my perspective, is in line with what Mr. Jackson calls the building of his legacy, his choice to want to do that in Shreveport. And so this is about film production. This is about content production and all of the intended jobs and other economic development activity that goes along with it.
Can you unravel, and I should know this, but I don't, so I know the general public doesn't. Can you unravel the taxing district that we created to benefit him? Because it's not all of downtown. It's not all of the Red River District. I mean, what is that included and what does it do?
It includes the properties that he has selected and that has been agreed upon by the city and the state in creating that district that will level levy an additional 2% sales tax. It's called a TIF or tax increment financing district.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different than what we did back in 2011, 2012, and 2013 for Mall St. Vincent.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember at that time, and we didn't do it for all of Mall St. Vincent because right. the owners didn't own the Sears store, nor do they own the Dillard's property.
Dillard's, right.
But for everything else, we created a district that added an additional 1% so that if you came in and you shopped there, and what you cost, what you bought, came with a 10% tax, then now you paid an 11% tax. Mm-hmm. So what cost you $1.10 now costs you $1.11, and that additional 1 cent is segregated and given to you for the agreed upon purposes, usually to enhance, to improve, or to make what you're trying to do there more economically viable in terms of being able to succeed.
Won't he have to pay some of this tax on things that he's building and doing?
The folks who come to patronize. So
okay.
when you go to that establishment and whatever your bill is for your drinks, your food, your entertainment, or what have you, 2% is added onto that.
So he's not going to pay the tax as he's improving these businesses on spending the money.
To my understanding, this is a part of the sales tax. Now, because okay. this is activity that's taking place within his district, then you may end up having the sales tax for those products and what have you, if he uses that as the address from which it's purchased. But in this case, but just like with Mall St. Vincent, the tax is intended to be assessed upon economic activity that takes place within the district.
Okay. And he's planning on restaurants and entertainment venues and all those kinds of things. Do you know any more about his plan? What things he's included? He's talked about he needed a hotel. He needed more pools. All of that for you is a good thing, a win for downtown.
Absolutely. All those are great things. All those are wonderful things. And again, all of those are things that are built upon the primary focus for which he's interested in coming here. And that is, if you do so, the state of Louisiana provides you a production tax credit for making TV, for making movies, and making other types of content.
Okay. When we come back, you talked the last time you were here, we talked a little bit about the Red River District and how you said it was based on a premise, a faulty premise. I want to talk to you about that and contrast that with what's happened in Bossier. And let's discuss that when we come back.
Absolutely.
Let's do it. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Back with Cedric Glover, DDA director, former mayor. You mentioned the last time you were here, you questioned the whether it was a good plan to have the city in the business in the Red River District of trying to have an entertainment area to lure folks from the riverboats when it was developed, because that was the goal. And I thought about that later, and I thought, well, they're doing it in Bossier. The East Bank District seems to be pretty successful. What's the difference between the Red River District and the East Bank District?
Well, I think you don't compare the Red River District to the East Bank. I think you compare the Red River District to the boardwalk.
Ah, okay.
And people are not in the boardwalk for the same reason people are not in the Red River District, in my estimation. I think the East Bank is nice. It is well done. It's a reproduction of the kind of downtown walkability, authenticity that you already have a great deal of on the Shreveport side of the river. And so I applaud it, and it's great, and hope it continues to grow and to succeed. But in terms of a comparison to the Red River District, you want to compare it to the boardwalk as opposed to the East Bank, because there is authenticity within East Bank as well. That's part of what it builds upon.
And it's not city owned. The East Bank is correct. All privately owned.
Not privately, but public infrastructure.
Okay.
Because the infrastructure was put in by the public.
Right.
That stretch of bike lanes and sidewalks and what have you that you would really want to have throughout the entirety was all done, you know, at the public expense. And you have to remember, John Elkington, the man who brought the Red River District here, is famous for what? Bill Street.
Sure.
There is decades of history that he built that upon. So he came and took something that was authentic and just simply gave it a new life for a new generation. That was his intent when he originally came here, because his original areas of interest were Commerce Street, also Texas Avenue in the area adjacent to the Municipal Auditorium, and potentially across Bayou. He ended up settling on the Red River District area across from what was then Hollywood Casino because you could wrap it all up in the development of the new Hollywood Casino concept that was coming forward at that time under the Williams administration, building the second casino on the Shreveport side of the river, the new parking garage attendant to it, and then you include within that the city-funded Red River District, and you end up with something that you thought was a good idea, not understanding that you're now setting these businesses up to compete against somebody who's giving away what they're trying to sell for a profit.
A lot of people compare the Curtis 50 Cent Jackson project with Tyler Perry in Atlanta. And I think it's a little different in that Atlanta, prior to Tyler Perry, was already a huge monstrosity of a city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, busiest or second busiest airport in the nation.
The capital of the South.
Yes.
And the busiest airport in the world.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that we could compare because he didn't change Atlanta completely because it was already so huge.
Correct.
But for us, it could be a complete game changer.
Well, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I mean, if I could make Shreveport have all of the positives that Atlanta has and give Atlanta the issues and challenges that we have, I take that bargain every day.
Mm-hmm.
But again, going back to the core for both Tyler Perry and for Curtis Jackson, in that you have personality-driven film and content production. You have branded content and film production. And so, yes, Tyler Perry is doing that in Aces and really elevating and advancing in Atlanta in a very big way. Curtis Jackson is coming here, and what he does will just simply make him the very big fish in a small pond.
Mm-hmm.
For Tyler Perry, he's the big fish in an already huge pond.
Right.
And so in terms of impact and significance and what have you, they are different in that regard. But the biggest thing that makes them similar is that you're talking about brands, you're talking about icons, and you're talking about individuals who have demonstrated records of success of being able to produce content that people want to see and support. So you end up with basically an industry that grows up and around them that employs hundreds and eventually thousands.
Do you anticipate, you've been in the legislature before, do you anticipate that this deal with Curtis 50 Cent Jackson will keep our film and tax credits entrenched in Louisiana? They will realize if we take these away again, like we did before, we're going to hurt a community.
I am certainly hopeful that we are going to learn from our past. I mean, I told Mr. Jackson back in the November of 24, when the legislature threatened those credits at that time, that you should put your checkbook up until you get an assurance that there's going to be some certainty, because you're being asked to make investments that are have to be amortized over a much longer period of time than 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to have some certainty about the business environment under which you're operating. I was unfortunately out of office in 2015 when the renewal came up, and they ended up not being effectively renewed. We managed to lead that effort in 2009. We led it again in 2012. In 2015, when it came around, Bobby Jindal decided to do what he did. And the folks in Georgia specifically said, we're taking this opportunity with Louisiana doing what it has done to position Georgia to surpass them in terms of being Hollywood South. Because people forget, we started this back in 2002. Being the first state in the country to incentivize production. We also incentivize infrastructure production for the film industry as well. That's how we got Millennium Studios.
Yes.
And so we had a great opportunity, a great advantage, and we were way ahead, even with Katrina, and we fumbled that ball in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that we are smart enough not to do so again, especially now that you have someone who has stepped forward. Similar to Tyler Perry going to Atlanta, we have some that has that similar global iconic status who has decided to come to our little burg. And again, whether any of the other stuff that he does that, you know, is fun to him, that's lots of glitz and glamour that can end up attracting a lot of tourists to come here.
Mm-hmm.
If we just simply get the production.
Yes.
That in and of itself will give us something that will be greatly beneficial to Shreveport and Northwest Louisiana.
You bet. Cedric Glover, thank you for being here. We got another 30 or so minutes. We're going to talk about the birthright citizenship ruling from the Supreme Court. That's coming up. Maybe Cedric Glover's a soccer fan. We'll ask him about that next. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
USA Soccer tonight. It's the big World Cup match taking on, you're going to say it for me, Cedric Glover, Bosnia.
Herzegovina.
On the scale of sporting events that Cedric Glover is a huge fan of, where is soccer on that scale?
If it's coming to Shreveport and bringing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, I'm a 10.
Okay.
If it's something you're asking me to sit down and watch, I'm a 0.
Zero?
Zero.
Wow.
Absolutely.
You're just not a soccer fan.
I don't get it. I would be one of those guys who would have the urge to jump on the field and go tackle somebody.
You want to hit people.
I want to hit somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I need to see somebody hit. I need to see somebody running with the ball. I need to see a pass. You know, I need to see something intercepted, somebody high-stepping back to the other way.
You would be for tackle soccer, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Tackle soccer all day long.
Oh, man.
I mean, and see, the great thing about football is that everybody can play. The linemen for the big guys, you know, quarterbacks and wide receivers for
the speedy guys,
mm-hmm. You know, linebackers for the medium-sized guys. You know, you got to be these little waifs out here running around with your little shorts on, you know. You know, we call those nutters back in the 70s. You know, I'm sorry.
Edit this whole segment out, Ruben. Edit him all out, please.
I don't get it. You know, there's no timeout, you know.
Yeah,
no. No drama that builds, you know. There's no two-minute drive. You know, there's
Watch one match. Watch the match tonight. I hope it gets to PK. Well, I don't want it to get to PKs. But
and then does the clock, like, count up as opposed to counting
down?
Yeah,
I don't understand that one either.
And then if it's still 0-0 at the end, you know, you just stop. I mean,
Now we have to have a winner.
Okay, now you have to have
a winner. We're in the knockout rounds where we have to have a winner.
I don't see the drama in it. I don't see the strategy. You know, obviously the skill of being able to do that with your feet and a ball is pretty impressive. But I mean, I can get that watching the guys do that in the park as they go back and forth.
Right.
You know, and then even a hacky sack is more impressive to me than doing that with a soccer ball.
I mean, my new headline, Cedric Glover, anti-patriotic, hates USA soccer. Don't do that.
And then the fact that they insist on calling it football everywhere else. I mean, that's offensive as well. It's soccer. Call it what it is. It's not football. You know, football is football. You know, soccer is soccer.
Although
I do have fond memories from childhood of Pele.
You know,
back in that whole 70s era of Major League Soccer, the New York Cosmos. I mean, I was aware of that. Soccer should be kickball.
Cedric Glover, Downtown Development Authority. Address it to Cedric Glover at the Downtown Development Authority. When we come back... I'm really, really a little bit miffed by this birthright citizenship ruling and how it went like it did. And can we talk about that next?
I do have one suggestion, though, before, though.
Yeah?
The World Cup of Kickball.
Okay.
That's one that we need. We need the World Cup of Kickball. And I could do well at that one.
You could do well.
Absolutely.
Mike Johnson's on my kickball team. You know that.
I may need a pinch runner. Once I get to first.
That's not me. We'll have to find somebody else for that one. We're going to talk birthright citizenship when we get back. 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Back with former Mayor Cedric Glover, currently the Downtown Development Authority Director. The U.S. Supreme Court voted 6-3 to uphold automatic birthright citizenship, striking down President Trump's executive order, which would have changed that. The 14th Amendment essentially guarantees citizenship to all children born on U.S. soil. Were you surprised it wasn't a unanimous decision, Cedric?
No.
Explain why.
Because I have come to understand, after 30-plus years of being an elected official and a lifetime of being in and around people in public service, that unfortunately there are those amongst us who just simply have the ability to be able to abandon any real grounding or mooring and simply do that which we think will be pleasing to folks that they're trying to please.
When you hear Mike Johnson in the news saying he thinks this ruling was wrong, what do you say to him? He's a constitutional attorney.
God bless him. He's my friend. But we obviously have some great differences. This is one of them. And that, you know, I think one of the things that I always tried to do was to reflect on how history would judge the things that I have done and will do. And that if I end up seeing that I could end up potentially on the wrong side of history, then that means you need to reconsider and reexamine and be sure that what you do, what you say, and where you stand is actually the best place to be. And I think in this instance, history will not judge those three individuals well or those who support their position.
They claimed, this is Clarence Thomas in dissent, argued that the 14th Amendment's citizenship clause only applies to former slaves and their descendants. But that's not what the constitutional amendment says.
Exactly. And it's right in line with those who say that the Second Amendment only applies to the muzzle firearm technology as it existed in the 1780s. That's not true either, because that's not what it says. And so for Justice Thomas to be able to believe that he can offer that insight, that perspective, that interpretation, when that's not what the language says, to me, again, is an example of how ultimately, when it's all said and done, history should and I hope will judge him very harshly for that.
We have to really think about it. And I know there are some that are going to follow President Trump, and they do so blindly. And I'm sorry for that, because I think he's wrong on this. I don't think a president should have the power to change our Constitution, period. I don't think Barack Obama could have signed an executive order completely changing or upending the Second Amendment and our right to bear arms. And if Barack Obama had done that, people would have raised hell.
Absolutely.
And you would have said he didn't have the power to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, part of what we're doing right now is abandoning that which has made this uniquely American experiment so special. And that is that we recognize that we were not going to create any branch of government that would be so vested with power that they would be able to overrule and neutralize the others. That's why you have the system of checks and balances, and that they are three co-equal branches of government. It just so happens that the executive branch has it all concentrated within one single individual, but they're all co-equal, and they all should be respectful of each other, and you should not end up being able to just simply berate and browbeat folks into aligning with you because it's what you want, as opposed to what it is that the Constitution actually lays out.
Does it scare you that we have three justices on our Supreme Court who thinks the president's executive order was okay and legal?
It scares me, but I also take heart that despite that fact, there were six, amongst which are some that this president appointed, that chose not to betray what they know to be the right thing to do. Because, frankly, I was expecting that if the president wanted it in this instance, that he was going to get it. And so the fact that that did not happen and that you did not end up seeing two more votes following the lead of those three, I take heart in that.
And I would say I don't want people flying here to have their babies so that the baby can be a U.S. citizen. But I would say stop that.
Correct.
That's what we have to stop. And they're claiming they have closed the borders. So you've solved that problem, right?
Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
We're not having birth citizenship, birth tourism anymore. So I don't know that we even need this in place.
Well, bottom line is, if you want to change the Constitution, there are means and mechanisms by which to do that. It's been done, I think, is it 33 times already? So it's possible. Is it easy? No. But it's not easy for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the Louisiana State Constitution.
Yes, exactly.
But that's another conversation
altogether.
Absolutely.
Why you need to be downtown today, we will talk about that when we come back. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
With former Mayor Cedric Glover and current DDA Director. You've had a lot of hats over the years.
I have.
Do you have a favorite?
Obviously, you know, there's no experience. As Mayor Hussey, who our dear friend who passed away, he epitomized what it means to be mayor. There's no job in politics that's greater or better than being mayor of your hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it to death. Was a great experience, but I've enjoyed everything I've had a chance to be able to do, from you know, running the staffing company to being a city council member, you know, up and down the road to Baton Rouge was fun some days, not fun some others. But I'm absolutely having a ball doing what I'm doing right now.
Okay. Downtown Development Authority Director. How is it 2 years now? How long?
October of 24. So just over a year and a half.
Closing in on it. Mm-hmm. Okay. You have what's called Lunch and Discover, and it's happening today.
Yes. A Lunch and Discover series that we have started. We'll be doing probably every other week until the end of the year. Then we'll start back up early part of next year. Starts at 10:30 at Vine Books and Vinyl, 620 Texas. We start off with music. Eddie Spencer will be setting the mood. We have a tasting table that will be provided by the great folks at Fat Tuesday's restaurant. We'll have speakers. We'll be giving away prizes. You can come in and win free prizes for Lunch on Us coupons for $12.50 that they're valued at. You can win a gift certificate to downtown retailers that are valued at $25. You can network. You can meet folks. Have a great time. We'll also have ice cream will be provided by the Cyport liquid nitrogen ice cream. And then also TC from Robertson Produce. We'll have our free produce table there. So come and grab some fresh fruit, bananas, peaches, apples, oranges, and what have you. But just a great chance to be able to come down, see an aspect of downtown, sample some food, win some prizes, meet some great people, tell us about your business, receive some great information. Bill Sabo will be coming in to talk about the retail strategies initiative that we've partnered with the city on as well. So just a great chance to be able to come down, connect, and see the great things that are happening in downtown Shreveport.
And it's free.
And it's free.
10:30, and then it goes until 1?
10:30 until 1.
That is awesome. And it's 620 Texas at Vine Books and Vinyl. It's your way of hoping not only just to bring people to downtown, but to get the folks that are already in downtown.
Oh, yeah. Our primary audience are people who are already downtown. Mm-hmm. If you're right now in one of those buildings, if you're in Louisiana Tower, if you're in Government Plaza, you're at the courthouse, you're anywhere in downtown, near downtown, that where you just simply can get up out of your office and go walk, go get your coworkers, your friends, and what have you, and you guys just come walk a couple of blocks. If you're not in downtown, drive your car. There's lots of curbside parking. Park, walk a block or two, and come on in as well, but you're welcome. But yes, this is primarily focused on the folks who are already there, creating an experience that lets them know that there are great restaurants, great retailers in and down around downtown Shreveport. You are their primary base of customers.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to know who they are, where they are, and here's your chance to be able to go out and sample either their food or some of their products.
Absolutely. Great event. Lunch and Discover happening today, downtown Shreveport, 620 Texas, at Vine Books and Vinyl. Cedric Glover, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's a wonderful hour, and yeah, they do pay me to do this.
Some people get heaven on earth.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.